But there is one they fear. In their tongue, he is Dovahkiin, Dragonborn.
Holy shit! What is this? Forged in God's very flames! Do mine eyes tell me lies? A new Elder Scrolls game! Time is nigh! I must fly! Venture forth on my quest! Goodbye Ma, goodbye Pa, and goodbye girlfriend's breasts! I'll be off! As a rough! Catch you later, Hyrule! I'll be gone, I'll be on, I'm no longer your fool! The crab filled the gap while I waited to begin the adventure of my life in the land of Skyrim!
Welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 9-1. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me, as always, is my main mage, Sean Nola Kirkland. And I say mage because his El Shaddai review is pure magic.
Aw, thank you. I'm not a mage, though. I'm usually a warrior or a dwarf.
Okay, you are a dwarf. So, and also, we got the Blue Ranger who shot the food, Eric Blue Swim.
Triceratops!
Okay. That went as well as my gauntlet reference. So,
a Blue Ranger, might as well go with it.
Right. Savvy listeners.
Oh, shot the food. I get it.
Yes.
I would have gone with needs food badly.
Oh. For some reason, I always shot the food because I was so eager. I was, going just nuts on the enemies that I'd end up shooting the food. So,
play some Gauntlet. Can I start the show off with this weird story I had?
Is it about Gauntlet?
No, it's about a dream I had.
Okay.
It was an oddly realistic dream at the time, to the point where the next day it took me a while to remember that was a dream. But I had this dream, and you were there, and we were sitting at the farm. You remember that restaurant at the Nokia Center?
Where we had
lunch with Cheapy and the gay gamer guys and that one guy who was apparently famous that we didn't know.
Okay, but, so a dream, all men. Okay, continue at the farm.
It was all men. Anyway, so but Cheapy was there eating lunch with us again, and he was showing us pictures, not of his junk, but he was like, "Hey, I know what they're gonna show at the Microsoft conference." And he shows us his picture. He's like, "We're at a layover in China, and look, these are the new Microsoft phones, and they've got Kinect integration." And sure as shit, when we watched the Microsoft presser, that was what they showed, was these Windows Phone 8s with Kinect built into them. But it was like, this weird
fever dream
ball thing. I don't know. Yeah, it was a fever dream, but it was like everything about it was so realistic. And then the next day, I'm just like, fuck, Kinect phone, that makes so much sense. And then I was like, no, that doesn't make sense. No, that was a dream.
Well, the thing that threw me out of the whole storyline was us going to the Microsoft presser, which I
had done. That's the thing, is we weren't at the Microsoft presser. We watched it on a laptop.
Oh, okay. Damn, yeah. We're right there then.
Yep.
Okay, so let's start things off now that we've got that excised out of our system. Let's talk, let's hear from Blue. I want to know what you've been playing, good sir.
Well, when I was at Walmart a few days ago, I came across a Vizio 8-inch Android-powered tablet. And apparently it came out back in July.
Right. You got to tell us the price on this.
Actually, that's exactly what I was getting to.
Okay.
I think it came out in July for like $329 or $350, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Android 2.3. I believe it's Gingerbread. I think that's what 2.3 is. And
I can't keep the Android bread straight.
I'm going through the alphabet. I'm like H-I-D. Yes.
Jelly.
It's not, it's not ice cream sandwich.
I was over at Walmart, and I came across the tablet, and I believe it came out back in July for about $329 or $350. And with the Kindle Fire coming out, I guess about less than a week from now, I've been thinking about tablets because I've been using the Kindle, or I've been using the Kindle app a lot, as well as the Android phone I got for my birthday. It's a great phone, but it's not the best in the world for web surfing. So I was wanting to get something a little bigger that wasn't quite a laptop. And I found a, you know, ripped up ad just laying on top of a box when I was walking through Walmart, and I saw it for $1.98, and I started getting really excited because I was like, this has a camera. It's automatically better than the Kindle Fire. I mean, the Kindle Fire doesn't have camera, doesn't have, I don't believe it has a microphone or Bluetooth or anything like that. And so I went to the electronics department, and I was actually going to toss the thing on layaway, but apparently I was a little late to the party, late to the point where the entire party had broken up. The entire mess had been cleaned up, and the parents were back home. And I ended up having to trek quite a ways to find this thing. And when I got back and, you know, ran the updates with it, I was surprised to when I logged on with my Google account, I was surprised to see that, you know, the apps that I'd purchased, I purchased a couple of games, Game Dev Story, Hot Spring Story, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were available to re-download at no charge.
That's all linked to your account. Like, so I'm on my third Android phone and my first tablet, and yeah, it's like every single one of those. Like, all right, you own this forever.
Is there a limitation to the number of devices that can?
No, because their idea is that you will continually be updating your devices, and mm-hmm. that. Theoretically, you will always be buying more content, not just repurchasing the content you already have.
That's cool. I like that.
But overall, as far as the actual performance of the tablet goes, it's there are times when it does just kind of chug a bit or hang. There's some times where, like, button presses, like the back button or the menu button or whatever. I know I'll press it. But it's but it doesn't register. And with the design of the Vizio, it's there isn't like an actual tactile button. It's just a little sensor underneath the screen.
Yeah, that's how my Android Tab is, or my Samsung Tab is. And yeah, it's really frustrating when you need to hit it and it's not illuminated and you can't necessarily find it.
I will say that basically the same price as the Kindle Fire and I believe the Nook Color. It gets the job done. It's not going to blow your skirt up as far as performance goes. But I mean, I was able to use Skype with it. Video chat on Skype kept on screwing up. The perspective would be messed up on it. Like I'd be holding it straight. Except to the other person, I'd look upside down, turn it one way, and it would end up looking like I was on the side. And basically, the app was not fully.
Did you tell people you were in Australia?
That might be a pretty good idea.
Let Ma throw another shrimp on the pop.
I like how
Crikey, look at this stingray. It's beautiful.
I like how Rob's Australian accent is almost a Southern accent.
Yeah.
Anything below LA is just, the South. Doesn't matter if it's below the equator or not.
So, Rob.
Yes.
Do I even bother asking you what you've been playing?
Let me start off with one game, which one of the podcasts that beat us on N4G had a question whether Uncharted 3 was overrated. And one of the things I've been seeing kind of in the gaming journalism world is one site gave the game a 4 out of 10. So I put through body and soul into the game and spent about 10 hours predominantly in the multiplayer, which I'm not a
I was just about to say, I haven't really gotten the story mode, but I played a shit ton of multiplayer.
Oh, we need to play. And I think Uncharted 3 is kind of a weird game, much like 2. I think for all its beauty, its charm, and its polish, and there are a few moments where the game shows its seams,
it's weird because Uncharted 3 is a game kind of at odds with itself, and just like 2. And by that, I mean the story, I think, is one of the best in gaming. Its characters, they never really feel like real people, but they don't have to. It's very similar to Indiana Jones films, where the leads are just fascinating to watch, even in simple interactions, just talking. And even the auxiliary characters, they're given the type of quirks which are endearing and allow for humorous situations. I'm not sure how much of the story you've played, Sean.
Not very much at all. I'm waiting to play until my girlfriend gets here, because she wants to play through it with me.
Okay, so not even like first chapter or second chapter?
No, okay. I've specifically only played multiplayer.
Okay, well, there's one character, he's kind of like this muscle from England, and he happens to be claustrophobic, and you know, they're given these little interesting nuances there. And with so much kind of writing on the story, it's almost strange that Uncharted 3, just like 2, has this multiplayer world, and one where you know, fat Nathan Drake shoot each other in the face. You know,
Fat Nathan Drake.
have you unlocked Fat Nathan Drake yet?
I haven't, but I've seen Fat Nathan Drake.
Yeah, I saw 2 Fat Nathan Drakes fighting each other, and that was a wonderfully surreal moment that had nothing to do with the story and kind of almost dispels the myth.
But multiplayer in that is so good, though, because
it is.
All the traversal stuff just carries over so well.
And I did not expect, and not only is it polished the actual game, because I think one of the things that they did with it is they went for a feel like what Brink was hoping to do. But to me, that Uncharted TV, that component where, let's say, you're waiting for a match, you can see like the plays of the week, or you'll see different parts and you can enlarge that part of the screen. There's like a video, almost a YouTube.
Yeah. In the beta, what they did, which I thought worked well, but I think the final actually works even better. But in the beta, they would just pick a random game, and you would just watch that game while you were waiting.
Yeah, and the ability to see those things as you're waiting, it's something to do while you're waiting, for your party. And I think that is really cool. Now, I know a lot of people online that I was playing with, the people that did have headsets, they were kind of complaining about it, and that characters could kind of walk away from multiple shots. But had Naughty Dog, had they brought over the single players, the game system and the mechanics, the multiplayer would have been no fun at all. I mean, as it is right now, one of the things I really like is you can stand on a ledge, you can pump bullets into an enemy. And every once in a while, let's say you're doing that, and there's an enemy on a ladder, they can melee you and throw you off the ledge and offer, I think, one of the great reversals in a multiplayer game. The first time that happened to me, I was like, what the fuck? Here I'm shooting some guy in the head, waiting for him to die. He reaches out, grabs me, throws me over.
Yeah. Well, in my thing, too, so in your first-person shooters, when you have zero spatial awareness, it's basically if you get shot at, you drop down, or you have like a split second to figure out where they're shooting you from. Right. But like running away from it is never really an option, right? Like you have to have situated yourself into a place where that's not going to happen, where you can't see it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Uncharted, you get shot in it and looking for cover or, making your getaway, that's a real option. And that's a lot more similar to how I play. Mm-hmm. And it fits the feel of the game, because Nathan Drake, he's not always on top of his shit. And you still feel that way in the multiplayer. Right. And I don't know. I think it translates really well.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay. So I guess there is a little bit of overlap there. But I don't think there's any reason why the game should be getting a review score below an 8. I mean, the script is so skillfully written. I mean, at times there seem to be poking fun at video game tropes without even breaking the fourth wall. I just think it's an experience not to be missed. It is so fun. There are some instant deaths in the single player game. You can be gunned down while you're in a fist fight, and I was getting the occasional stutter, and I really only noticed that because it's such a cinematic experience. But that title is definitely a contender for Game of the Year.
Yeah, the complaint in that one review, as far as I know, is that it didn't do anything super new over Uncharted 2, which is the same complaint that I think maybe even the same website had with Batman Arkham City, was that it was just...
But
I don't think that's necessarily valid. But,
right. I think I was focused... There's the opening sequence where you're in a bar fight, and there's so many games that have placed you in kind of a brawler setting, and that, to me, it felt fresh. And it felt fresh because there was this distinction that usually happens between this is when you're fighting, now QTE, quick time event. And that was almost removed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. It's like, well, when Nathan Drake, you know, picked up a bottle, was it because, you know, that was already pre-planned, or was because of the situation? I'd moved the guy in the corner. And I don't know. There's so much really cool scripting and the humor and the dialogue that knocking it because, you know, the characters and settings just doesn't feel right to me.
The thing about both of those games is if they had spawned a bunch of copycat games and then didn't do anything new.
Sure.
Then that would be a valid complaint. But the fact that the only games like Arkham Asylum, the only one I could think of was Captain America, which wasn't as good.
Mm-hmm.
And Uncharted 3, there hasn't been another first person or third person adventure title like it. So why would I want it to do anything new? You know, I want more Uncharted 2. Yeah. Give me a more polished extension of that, and I've been waiting 2 years for that. Why could I even complain about that? I don't want you to fuck it up by adding... Yeah.
From a business standpoint, you have something that sold exceptionally well, critically acclaimed, and if you change too much of it, there could be a backlash. There could be people that say, I don't necessarily like this mechanic.
Yeah.
And games, one of the things that they do with sequels is... Call of Duty, we're going to talk about Modern Warfare 3. One of the things is it has had the privilege of going through, you know, almost endless cycles where it has polished and refined the multiplayer and added variations and added little tidbits that maybe, you know, suggested from players and is continually adapted. And I don't know. It's really hard for me to knock that game for not innovating enough.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some commercials for Uncharted 3, and to me, the cutscenes didn't really blow me away from what I saw.
You have to experience the game.
Yeah, it's not a cutscene game. It's a cohesive experience.
The characters themselves, you know, even if you are so sick of hearing the voice actors, you're just going to get sucked in because the nuance, the way it's delivered, the facial expressions, you know, they I believe that they shoot that on a sound stage.
Yeah.
And the nonverbals, just the nuances are really believable. And I don't know, they do some, I don't want to ruin it for you guys, but they do some things with a flashback sequence. It's just really fun at the beginning of the game. And their rapport, you know, between the leads is really good.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is a cohesive experience. Like, so to...
I liked it better. I liked it better than most of the films I've seen within the past year. I just had more fun with it. You know, it's just the humor's there. It's a fun experience. And you don't want the game to end. You just want it to, you know, continue and keep going. You want to see more of these characters.
Yeah, but like I said, I haven't done any of the story in Uncharted 3, but like Uncharted 2, the opening scene is one of those things that's always going to stick with me when you're in the train wreckage and you're climbing up there. And they went to the trouble of every handhold, every, you know, rung of the ladder that you pull up is just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So it feels like you're watching a movie, but you're interacting with it, and it's just so detailed, and it's something that you would see in a big blockbuster film, but you're doing it. And that's something that we've been trying to do for years, and there are so few examples of where that's actually pulled off well. And the entire game does that. It starts you that way, and then for the rest of the game, you are directly interacting with this story that it's not like, oh, man, this is almost like a movie. It's like, if you took the interaction out, this would sell. It's right.
I think there are some moments, though, where the story kind of stops and they're pushing you to an action sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And for one reason or another, the action sequence, maybe they don't telegraph certain things or the shooting goes on too long, where you almost, for me, I kind of fell out of the narrative. And I said, I want to go back to that. I want to jump back to that. Whereas maybe navigating or shooting, it felt like a stopgap. It felt like a hurdle I had to overcome to get back and have some more fun with this.
Well, and one of the things that all three of them have done is they put in some of the artificial elongators, I guess you can call them.
Yeah.
But, you know, like collecting and stuff. And if you don't give yourself this notion of I'm going to come back for all this, you'll ruin the experience because you'll be like, oh, I got to make sure I collect all the
trinkets,
artifacts in this, in, in this level, and so then you force yourself to break the narrative so you can go collecting. Mm. And like I said, I haven't done the story for the third one, so I don't know how bad that one is. But the second one, it definitely was like I had to say, all right, you will play this game a second time, and then you can go back and collect all the relics. But right now, you just got to experience this.
Yeah. Interesting. So speaking of possible game of the year, let's talk about my game of the generation. After spending at least 30 hours in Skyrim's world, I am completely hooked.
I'm going to eat a sandwich. Is that okay?
You want to listen. You'll want to listen. So as a kid, I secretly played Dungeons & Dragons, and I say secretly not only because it was the kiss of death socially at school, but my mom thought it was devil worship when she found my it was the Deities and Demigods book. She's like, what is this? She didn't quite understand.
Doesn't it kill you that high school kids now it's cool to play D&D?
I can't even imagine that. Because
I know, right?
It was like this top secret underground thing. We even had code words for it and stuff. Like, we wouldn't dare mention it in class.
We had a friend who I guess was like you, where he wasn't allowed to play. And no, so
it's allowed, but I just got my Deities and Demigods book thrown out.
We kind of did the co-word things. Basically, we took the rules and adapted it to make our own
monsters
game. Our own game in general. Like, we gave it a different name and everything like that. And my character was actually Shadow Warrior from the 3D Realms game. That was my character. Mm-hmm. Yeah. we actually had to make an entire new game out of D&D so that if we slipped in front of his mom, it would be okay.
Right. That's funny. So I've played a number over the years of kind of turn-based games which mimic the dice rolls of D&D or whatever Sean was playing, but so far I think this was the best, if not the most strict, interpretation of fantasy role-playing I've ever played. So let me share at least one story of my dark elf who, when you first start, you go back to the Elder Scrolls tradition as your prisoner. Not really spoiling anything the first minute or so. So you listen to this conversation between these fellow convicts, and you're on this horse-drawn cart, which is being pulled across the mountains, and you approach these front gates of the city. And as I was doing that, as soon as we got into the city, the frame rate just plummeted to slideshow levels, and the cart hit the wall. So in front of us, there was a cart leading, and it's just A-framed over the main gate, blocking all progress. And despite, you know, this blow, which would have sent, you know, my whole party, you know, with severed heads or with severe head injuries, the conversation just continues. And I got to start the game, which was kind of a downer and really made me worry. But beyond this fatal crash, which happened in the first 2 minutes of the game, I only got stuck in the environment a few times because I was, you know, trying to hang out and hide. And the game did lock up on me once. But other than that, I've put about at least, I think, 30 hours in Skyrim just every day.
Game of the generation.
Yep, you heard it. So I really think that out of the way, I mean, Skyrim's is just blend of a sandbox game just filled with choices that gives you enough long and short-term goals to keep you just glued for months. One of the things that it does that really works is it gets rid of the archetypical character classes that D&D and fantasy role-playing games have stuck to over the years. The, you know, as I opened the show with the wizard, the elf, and you can really play it your own way, which may turn some people off, but I enjoyed it.
You and I talked on the phone about how I was concerned about the amount of magic in the game, because I have yet to play a game that has a magic system that I thoroughly enjoy.
Why is that?
I don't know. We can bring back D&D. I hated using magic in D&D. I just want to hit stuff with a sword.
Is it because magic users by nature they have to kind of hang back and they're weak physically?
It's a little bit of that. It's also a little bit of I've got this mentality of I've got a set amount of MP or magic or whatever, and I have to save that up, as opposed to my sword has infinite ammo and I can just keep stabbing you as much as I need to
until it breaks.
Right. Yeah. But no. What I think I was listening to. I think it was Shipwreck who was talking about this, how his wife is like that, and she's been playing Skyrim, and she's super into it, and she just hits stuff with her sword, and she totally gets a lot out of it that way, and that made me feel a little bit more interested in it.
See, for me, I thought you were just so opposed to the idea of magic because it's pure fantasy. Because
no.
Me, I can't stand movies where people fly. Like Superman, I was never into Superman because he just, I don't know, he jumps in the air, and he holds his arms out, and he's flying. And that just...
They took flying away from him again. He's back to leaping now.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I can buy it if he's leaping through the air, if there's a reason for that. But flying, I never bought.
Well, spoiler, supposedly, after 5 years, his leaping becomes flying. But right now, now they rebooted everything, Superman can only leap.
Okay. Because the flying business, I didn't quite understand how he was able to do that.
Yeah.
He was breaking the law of physics for whatever reason.
You know how Thor does it. He throws his hammer so hard propels him. He's not actually flying either.
Okay. Well, at least that's a reason. Like Superman, he just holds his arm out and navigates. But I thought it was a reason for that. But anyway, back to Skyrim. There's just so much to do. I'm just, you know, completely overwhelmed. I love the combination. Like, I will use magic, and now you can, you know, carry magic in one hand and another weapon, like a melee weapon. You can carry your sword in another. And that traditionally, you've always had to make a choice. And maybe that's why I'm thinking you might like it, Sean, because mm-hmm. you don't have to use, you know, you don't have to be that pussy magic guy anymore. You can, you know, back that up with a robust, you know, weapon there.
Well, you know, like I was saying before the podcast, if it had come out on Tuesday, I would have bought it yesterday because I stumbled on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And man, that game has a good soundtrack.
It does.
Like, really, really good.
Right. No, it does. It does. One of my favorite things, the thing that never stops giving me a thrill, is just walking around. Once you find a location, you can, you know, fast move to it. But one of the things I like to do is just kind of, you know, play it as I would in the world and walk around. And the game will tell you that you just discovered something, much like Oblivion. And just the thrill of going and finding a crypt, never quite knowing what's in there. You know, never quite knowing if you're going to get your ass kicked because, you know, some bad guys. And one of the things I think is really interesting, and possibly room for improvement, is the enemies or even unknowns out there. You never quite know if they're going to be friendly or an enemy, towards you. And what I mean by that is, you know, you'll approach them, and if they start, you know, slinging arrows or pick up your sword, you know, you can be hostile towards them. But I have the feeling I killed people just because they were in the distance and other people around them were hostile. Does that make sense?
So I think I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So
is it?
Never quite have an understand. Like usually in real life, you walk up to a person and you have an idea. Okay, this guy's gonna kick my ass. Right? Or just by his posture, just by his stance. But they don't really articulate that in Skyrim. So every once in a while I walk up, hey, how's it going? Oh, shit, you're swinging a mace at me. I kind of think like,
that would be a bit of a problem.
Yeah, but so that is the only thing. So I kind of treat people in a very suspicious way until they show that they're not hostile towards me. That's a very minor issue with it. So that's Skyrim. Got any other questions?
Actually, I had a couple. When I was playing Oblivion, mm-hmm. I noticed that when you switch to the third person perspective, it was just garbage, completely just right. Unpolished. However you wish to word it, it did not look.
The animation was piss poor.
Yeah, like walking around, like walking backwards or mm-hmm. walking sideways, it just looked terrible.
Yeah, the crap.
Has that been?
I told you I was going to check that out. I did not. I just play in first person. I don't know why I don't like to play Oblivion in third person. Probably gives you a better standpoint, like when you're attacked by roaming monsters. But they do telegraph, like say you're roaming around, there's some wolves or something, and you'll hear the wolves cry before they come on the scene there. So I haven't checked it out. I accidentally switched in switch to third person one time, and I think the animation, if I recall correctly, was a little bit stilted, but improved. It still didn't seem, you know, completely natural like most games. And that's understandable just because there's so much stuff in there.
How easy is it to just get in the game, walk around? How sandboxy is it if you don't want to go through the main campaign?
Totally easy. The thing that they do is they drop you in a location, and that location, the immediate area, there's not too much that will kill you unless you screw with a certain, a certain breed of creature that you should probably know better not to screw with. Because I played the game and I didn't die for the first 3 hours. And then I saw some guys, they were, I don't know, herding sheep in the distance there. And I just said to, you know, go up to them and say, hey guys, you know, what's going on? And they came after me and killed me with one swing. And but other than that, I thought to myself, I probably should have known better. Other than that, no, it's really fun. If you don't want to stick to the storyline, you don't have to. And what's interesting is you can pick up certain perks, and with those perks, you can it will give you a little bit of clues and ways to go and head out on the journey if you're so inclined of playing that particular path.
Does the game make you feel like really powerful? I guess is a
yeah,
because with Oblivion, it's like you had, you know, your spells, but they made it, but it was weak and 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 it was weak. And, weak. Mm-hmm. And then like I had to put about like 40 or 50 hours to make it really something special. Is there anything that makes you feel like a complete and total badass in it?
Yeah, just the leveling system has really been improved in the way that when you use anything, like let's say you're sneaking up on a person. Like, you know, my dark elf, I guess he's kind of a rogue archer type, but with a little bit of magic. And every time, you know, I'm sneaking up, you'll get a bonus for that. If you're attacked and you're using your dual wielding, you'll get a bonus with that. And so very quickly, you start accumulating these bonuses. So when you go into combat, you feel pretty good, pretty sturdy. And so I'd never felt like, hey, I was this, you know, kind of wuss warrior in there. But there are definitely, if you go and you play it, you play the game carelessly, you know, if you go in sloppy to a group of enemies, you will get your ass handed to you. You know, so I think it plays, it strikes a very good balance, a very keen balance between the two. But that's... I did have to kill a dog. I wasn't too happy about that. Because, well, I'm not sure if I had to kill it, but there was a dog that was kind of barking, and I was afraid that it was going to tip off the person. And so, you know, arrow.
Oh, no. PETA's going to get upset.
Yeah.
Did you hear about PETA getting upset with Modern Warfare 3?
No,
or Battlefield? One of the two. One of the two of them in story mode. There's a part
the servers are for shit right now.
No, I guess in story mode there's a part where there's a rat that squeaks.
Right.
And you have to kill the rat, otherwise you get found out. And PETA has a problem.
God, I've seen that before in a game. but killing rats, I don't know. Really? Where do they draw the line? You know, can you kill roaches, ants, bugs, flies?
According to PETA?
Is it mammals that should be protected, or even insects?
No, because humans are mammals. They don't mind that so much.
Okay, never mind.
For the complete and total genocide of flies, Mario Paint should be banned.
That's right. I killed many with my mouse.
It's a high-profile game, and PETA's just getting publicity.
Yeah, that's more like it. So other than that, I've been playing some Modern Warfare 3, which is the ultimate... summer blockbuster nonstop action sequence. And it's interesting. You can tell, as I mentioned before, the polish that they put into that. They must have really sat down and figured out, okay, we're going to have still use the same code. So there are checkpoints. You are in a very linear path. But they mix it up enough, and they do enough things to hide those weaknesses. because they are using the same engine that's in the single player game. The multiplayer, there's so many options and customization that I really think that it may have an advantage in that level over Battlefield. Personally, I probably prefer Battlefield's more, you know, kind of long range, a little bit more thoughtful combat, whereas Modern Warfare is very twitch oriented. But
it's interesting. My girlfriend watches all those, you know, like E-News and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting to see how often Modern Warfare has come up in entertainment news because analysts are saying that they expect that to make more money than Avatar did, which means it'll be. Well, no. Overall.
Okay.
Yeah, because Black Ops made, I think, $1.59 billion, which was more than Titanic had made. But Avatar's made, I think, just shy of $3 billion. And they think that Modern Warfare 3 will break that.
Did they report on how much it cost to make? I'm sure it was much cheaper.
Well, they're just saying how much, you know, like how much a product makes takes mm-hmm. all that into consideration. Mm-hmm. So. I think Modern Warfare might have been more expensive to make than Avatar, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
Are you sure?
It might have been. I don't know.
Then Avatar? Avatar cost an upwards of $200 million.
You don't think that Modern Warfare, when you factor in marketing and, you know, all the servers?
No, I don't think it was that much. I really don't think, because they were using the same engine. I think it could be up there, but I don't think it's in that area. I don't know.
But anyway, if it does break Avatar's record, it will be the most profitable
entertainment.
Most profitable media in history. Well, so
interesting.
Interesting times for video games.
But they still feel kind of isolated in the same way, you know.
Even the fact that E! News is covering that is. That's, I mean, it's dumb, but it's telling.
Yeah, sure. Now, why is your girlfriend watching E! News?
Because she does that thing where she comes home and she flops down on the couch and she turns the TV on. And
that is watches, the equivalent to Modern Warfare 3.
Just basically, she watches E! News and, like, whatever she can watch that she doesn't have to think about, like, Disney Channel crap.
Oh, my gosh.
And yes, she's a grown woman. I am not a pedophile. She just...
Well, you are, but that's beside the point. That's another topic. No, I'm kidding. All right, so that's all I'm going to talk about. We'll talk about how centipede infestation is broken on the Wii and not so good on the 3DS.
You didn't want to talk about worms, Crazy Golf?
Oh, yeah, let's
I talk played about... that specifically because you wanted to talk about that last week.
Well, let's start it off. Kick it off. Let's talk about that.
It's worms, except you don't have to kill the other worms, but you still can. But yeah, the golf ball.
You still can. I've only played it as a single player game, and I got to admit, I'm somewhat satisfied.
That's how I was too. I was playing it. I was like, this game isn't very good. But then I look at it, and I was like, I've been playing this for 3 hours, so I guess it's good. But if you break it down to the elements, it's really not a good game.
Maybe I'm a little bit more lenient with you on that. I was kind of, I don't know, I was collecting all the gold coins. I guess I was having fun with it. I like the kind of chill vibe, the music.
Yeah, it is very chill.
And I think it was a good alternative to like Modern Warfare 3. I did find a few bugs with it. Some of the levels where there's the magnets, and these magnets either repel or attract your ball. At one point, I was just kind of on the outskirt of the magnetic field. And much like Angry Birds, where the physics have to stop before you can take your next turn, my ball was kind of slightly bouncing around pixel by pixel. And so I waited about 5 minutes, and it never stopped. But I did contact Team 17, and they said a patch is more than likely in the works. Worms fans.
You can get almost all the trophies in the first 18 holes. I after the first hole, I was 30% done with the trophies.
I really haven't checked. The one thing is I'm accumulating all this wealth, and I really haven't spent it much. I really haven't felt the need to customize and buy new clubs or balls. Did you get new balls?
I went in and I looked. Well, I haven't figured out how to unlock the balls because you can't buy them. You have to earn them.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But the clubs, like... Sorry. They try and make them even, you know, because it's competitive. But what it ends up happening is you look at it and you're like, well, the basic clubs are I saw kind it. Of the best.
Yeah, it seemed like there was you could get more power, but much like the Mario Kart, yeah. The trade-off was like, I don't have the same amount of control. And so I'm more likely, because I like to overdrive it, I'm more likely to shank it and just get that little putt out.
Yeah.
The putting game, too, is a little too simplistic for me.
Yeah.
Because you just it never really factors anything. I just hit it slightly below where the flag is. When you're putting, it's just a distance, and there's a meter, and you stop it, and there's really no nuance or anything to it. So it's just it's like a kind of a waste.
But I will say I was pleasantly surprised with it overall, because when you said, hey, Worms Crazy Golf, I thought it was going to be like Worms 4, you know, the 3D one.
Right.
I thought it was going to be basically Hot Shots Golf with the Worms 4 engine, which didn't sound appealing at all.
Wait, that sounds kind of cool.
No, it doesn't, because the physics in Worms 4 were crap.
Oh, okay. I'm imagining Hot Shots Golf, but just replace the characters with Worms.
Yeah.
Okay. You're thinking of Team 17's version of it. Okay, if they try to convert Worms 4, yeah. I'm with you on that one. So Worms, buy it? No?
$8 seems a little steep, but it'll go on sale eventually, and it's definitely worth checking out. I think it'd be a much better iPhone game than PS3 game, though.
Yeah, probably. Wait, did you play any multiplayer?
I did not.
Wow, neither of us did. Okay. Did you download the Carnival level?
I did. Yeah, I haven't tried it yet, though. I played through Britannia, and then I went back and I replayed some holes so that I could get the trophy for getting everything on one hole. But that's basically all I've done so far.
Is there a limit? And this is probably people are bored, so this will be my last Worms question. Is there a limit to the number of strokes you can take on a single hole before it totally kicks you out?
No, but you can't just progress unless you get par or less.
I know. So if you go back and you just want to milk all the coins, you can go back and just keep hitting the ball around. Mm.
Yep.
Which, I don't know. I thought that may have been a missed opportunity there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought limiting maybe the number, like kicking you out of the hole after you go triple bogey or something, would have been a little bit more interesting.
I mean, it might, but I have never. I mean, the hole I went back and collected all the coins on, I still managed to get a bogey. So
yeah. You're a Worms hot shot,
dude. Sage and I literally played Worms for an entire year, pretty much every night. So
is there wind in the game?
There is.
Okay.
It's just in that first course, there's no wind until the Britannia. 12th hole.
Okay.
And then it's only for like two holes, and then it's like, all right, no more wind for the rest of this course.
I didn't know the UK was so free of wind.
Apparently.
Mm, interesting. Well, I guess it's not a sim. What else you been playing, Sean?
I went to an event for SD Gundam Capsule Fighters Online, which is a free-to-play Gundam game. It's basically Virtual On with Gundams.
Can you use two sticks?
You can't. That was actually one of the things I asked them, was if they have a gamepad support.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said was, so it's a Korean game that's been out since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing for the rollout, it officially rolls out in December, but it's in open beta right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're doing is they started with that build and they just started translating it. And then pushing out the exact same patches. And they're like, down the line, there will be a patch with gamepad support. But at launch, it won't have it. Dude, that game was really fun.
Okay.
What I thought was really interesting.
Tell me more about the control scheme as it is right now.
I mean, it's a third-person shooter kind of control scheme. You know, WASD and a mouse.
Okay.
Each Gundam has its own kind of weapons. And you just switch weapons with the mouse wheel. So, like, I was Wing Zero, and I had a beam saber, and I had the rifle, and I had my machine gun head. And then you charge up. Every character has a special attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, my fourth slot. And so Wing Zero's is you run in close, you stab him with your beam saber, and then you pull out your guns, and you do. If you're familiar with the show, he does this thing where he sticks the guns out sideways and then makes one big beam with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of does that. He sticks his guns out sideways and then he spins around. But, no, it was really cool. It's what I thought was really interesting was all the steps they had taken to make sure that it was fair and balanced. Mm-hmm. So you can pick a Gundam like a I wrote this down somewhere, the name of it, but it was a Zaku with like, it looks like a giant green basketball, right?
Okay.
And he just had this giant beam cannon that just obliterated everything. Wow. And that's what one of the other guys picked. Mm-hmm. But the way they kind of manage that kind of stuff, because you could be that or you can be just like a basic GM unit if you want. Mm-hmm. And they're completely different characters with different attacks and different stats. And basically what it is the GM is worth almost nothing if you kill him. Mm-hmm. But that big ass mm-hmm. basketball guy with the giant beam cannon is worth a shit ton of points. So yeah. Like what they were saying, what I asked when he said that is, more often than not, a really skilled player with the GM will own any S rank, you know, beginner, because you can just keep throwing suicide missions at him. And meanwhile, this S rank guy is barely getting any points. Mm-hmm. And if you can just kill him once, you're set for the entire game.
Hmm.
So all these balance things they did like that. They also set it up so as you play, you're ranking up not only experience for your Gundams, but also for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get up to the point where you're, you know, you've got your S rank Gundam and you're a really advanced player and you play at in a beginner server, you just won't get very much experience for that. Okay. So the idea is that you won't have these really experienced players playing as beginners and vice versa. And then on the leaderboard, I guess they were kind of vague about it, but I guess being in certain spots on the leaderboard earns you certain stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the top spots are all based on your kill count and your experience. So you need the highest kill count and the highest experience to be in that number one spot. So there's actually a sort of tactic to going down and being a douchebag and killing a bunch of people that are worse than you. If you, like, you might have the best experience, but do that by going on these one-on-one battles with like really high-ranking characters.
Yeah.
But if you can also just, you know, go cream a bunch of people and get your kill count up, which, I mean, little details like that seem like no-brainers, but it's something like Call of Duty could actually learn from that.
Yeah,
because that's the big complaint everybody has. Oh yeah, I want to try Call of Duty, but you know, I don't want to go in and get killed. Well, if the people who are going to kill you can't play in your server, mm-hmm. then that wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
And it seems like such a no-brainer thing, but I'm surprised that more games don't do that kind of stuff. But
they did kill speaking of Call of Duty, going back to that, they did kill the friend limit of 100.
Oh, cool. They're
using their own servers. Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Now, my question, I think I asked this question last week when we were talking about the Marvel online game. Where does the money come in? What do you have to pay for? Is it machine gun parts?
So basically at the end of every round, you get a random item. That, mm-hmm. Well, it's random, but there are certain items that you'll like, certain missions that you'll be more likely to get a certain item than others. And if you want to buy an item so you don't have to wait to randomly get it, mm-hmm. you can do that also.
Mm.
So like if there's a specific Gundam you want and you don't want to wait to randomly get it, because there's 350 of them, you know, mm-hmm. chances of you getting the one that you want are pretty slim.
Right.
So if you want, you can just pay for him.
I see.
Or if you want to paint him pink and you don't want to wait to get pink paint, mm-hmm. You can do that also.
Mm. Okay.
So cool. It's pretty fair. They said that any of the Gundams that you get in story mode, you can't purchase. So there are some like Char Zaku. The only way to get that is to unlock him through gameplay. So, but I actually enjoyed it a lot. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't downloaded the open beta, but I might just wait until December when it comes out to play the full release. But mm-hmm. what I played at the event was really good. I really enjoyed it.
That's cool.
It was funny because the guy who does their PR, mm-hmm. I guess, used to work for GamePro.
Okay.
Like back in the early 90s. Right. And I gave him my card and he's like, oh, you're this guy. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, somebody sent me your card, because for the listeners who don't know, my card has a... I photoshopped, it's based on an old GamePro cover with Battletoads on the cover.
Right.
I basically remade the cover with the old Battletoads advertisement image. But somebody sent him my card because he worked on that issue, and he was like, yeah, you know, the guy who did the artwork for this issue, he works for Capcom now, and if you want, I can take his card and get him to sign it. And I was like, that's cool. No, I'm good.
Was he hurt? Was he crushed?
No, but it was really cool for me that like somebody thought that was that my card was cool enough to send this guy just because, mm-hmm. He made my day. But yeah, so that was SD Gundam. I also played Third Birthday, the Parasite Eve game that came out earlier this year.
Yep.
PSP. That game is interesting because the shooting is a lot more fun than I thought it would be. It reminds me a lot of Mega Man Legends 2. And the story conceptually is really cool.
Uh-oh.
Oh my god, it's so... The acting and the writing and just the way the story all unfolds is so bad. I am about 70% of the way through that game and I have no idea what's going on. Yep. Or, nor do I care. Like, every time in between level thing is, I'm like...
Skip.
I don't skip it, and that's the problem, is they make it so easy to skip the cutscenes, but I won't let myself do it.
Okay.
It's so bad.
You're a good man for sticking.
Like the dog with a cupcake sitting on its nose or something.
Well, and it does that thing that a lot of Japanese games do, where they make the relationships between people really obvious, but they make it so that the characters are so dumb they don't see it.
Right. Like,
who is Kyle? Well, let's see. You keep seeing all these flashbacks where he's your husband and you're marrying him. I don't know. And then he's like, who is Eve in relationship to here? Well, that Kyle guy showed up and he kept calling her our little princess. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's your daughter.
But
I don't know.
Don't comics do that? I mean, you see big old strapping Bruce Wayne and no one suspects he's Batman?
Well, that has the problem.
Same jaw. That's huge in a suit.
That's been the problem of it. Batman's been running for 80 years, and the fact that nobody's figured it out in 80 years is kind of silly.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, comics are usually good about, if there's a secret that at least whoever needs to, the secret needs to be kept from, will at least be believable in some right,
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know. This was just so bad.
That crosses media forms. The unbelievable component that we can see through, but the characters can't.
Yeah, but they just do such a bad job of it in this one. And I also don't like that it's a time travel game that you can't interact with anything. Like, what's the point of sending me back in time if nothing I do as the player makes a difference? Like, they might as well just be saying they're sending you to a different area. Like, putting time in the whole situation doesn't add anything to that story.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting concept that they just never do anything with. So,
but do you like the shooting?
I do like the shooting. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of Mega Man Legends 2, where you do that whole hold a button to lock on and shoot and run around and try to avoid their fire. But
Did it take you a while? It took me some time to adapt to the perspective change. I don't know, into its way of thinking. Because it wasn't, 3D, and I had to figure out like the angles and different tactical elements.
Not really. The one thing that was hard for me was the jumping into people's bodies.
Yeah.
It took me a while to figure out you could hold down the button to look at somebody, and so up until that point, positioning it so that you got the one you wanted was really difficult. Like, especially there's one boss fight where you have to get to the sniper. You have to use the sniper rifle, and only one guy has a sniper rifle.
Yeah,
and jumping into him was so difficult. And the boss has this one-hit kill move, and so if I didn't jump into the sniper in time, he would just kill him, and then I'd have to wait for another sniper to show up, which takes forever.
Did they ever explain why, when you jump into someone, how you carry your weapons?
No, they never do. Oh. Yeah, because that's the thing. You carry all your weapons, and then each guy has one special weapon that makes them unique.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of dumb. But I don't know. I'm still enjoying it, despite the fact it's terrible in every aspect other than the shooting. but the shooting saves it, so.
Yeah.
And another terrible game I was playing was Hydrophobia.
Oh, that for game, PS3. Now, is that, did you ever play the 360 version?
I did not.
Okay, I wonder if that was the same game.
It might be. This is Hydrophobia colon something. And
colon? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were actually doing like a colon wash.
It's weird because I plug it in. I download it because it's free. And I start playing it. And it's like, hey, do you want to calibrate your move controller? And I'm like, shit, I haven't charged that in, I don't know, whenever the last time I played my move was. And it said no. And then I just played it with a controller. And I have no idea how that would work with the move because that is... an Uncharted style platformer kind of game. I feel like it would be terrible with the move.
Yeah.
But, it's not very good, but I've been playing almost all the way through it. It's interesting because it's basically the idea is that this ship that you're on is being taken over, and you have to kind of liberate the ship, and it's sinking. So all these puzzles are kind of water based. So you might have to use a security camera to open a door that's across a room that you're not in yet to open up a door that has water on the other side so that you flood it and maybe drown some people or make a door that's higher up more accessible. But so a lot of the puzzles are just environmentally focused, and the shooting is really bad, but the whole concept is the shooting's supposed to be bad and that you're supposed to use environmental kills, but sometimes you're just like, especially later on in the game, where the enemies are basically wise to your environmental kills. So one of the things I like to do was stun them when they're underwater so that they'll drown. But then they get face masks, so now they don't drown anymore. So then it's like, okay, well, I like getting them close to explosive barrels. Well, they start pushing the barrels into the water, and they don't die when they're next to exploding barrels and they're underwater. I'm like, well, fuck. So if the whole point of this is environmental kills, why are you not letting me kill you with the environment anymore? Because when I shoot you in the head, it takes forever and it's dumb. But yeah, that's Hydrophobia. I will probably finish that because I hate myself.
Yeah, I didn't have fun with that.
Yeah, I'm not having fun with it either, but every time I turn my PS3 on, it's like, oh man, I should play Hydrophobia is like right there. You know what? I'm gonna keep doing this.
Yeah, you're a sadist for choosing
that. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
You already said why. You said you're waiting for your girlfriend to watch it.
But I can still play Uncharted 3 multiplayer.
Oh yeah.
That's fun. This is not fun. I just do it because I hate myself.
You do.
It's weird. Sometimes the crappier games are the ones that are easier to kind of just stick to or keep at instead of tossing them on the shelf and letting them end up buried in the backlog.
You know what I think it is, though? I think it's that the entire game feels like I'm close to the end. So for the past, like, 3/4 of this game, I'm like, I'm so close to the end, I might as well just see it through. And it doesn't end.
Or there's the whole thing, you don't want a good game to end, so you're just like, I'll stop here and savor the experience, whereas the bad game, you know, like Sean said, you're just hoping that it will end.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is when I downloaded that, at the same time I also downloaded Beyond Good and Evil. Haven't even started it yet. Everybody tells me I would love that game, and I have not even looked at it yet.
Did you play the original?
I have never played Beyond Good and Evil.
Wow.
Yeah. But everybody tells me I would love it, like that it's right up my alley and all this other stuff, but... Like, yeah, I downloaded it literally at the same time I downloaded Hydrophobia. I have not looked at it, and instead have been playing this terrible, terrible game.
I didn't play it on this generation, but everyone told me it's kind of dated now. And I didn't even want to jump back into it knowing and kind of ruining my memory because I did have a good time with it.
Well, we'll see what I think 3 years from now when I actually decide to play it and it's not buried under other stuff.
Cool. Did you ever play Enslaved?
No, I own that game. I lent it to a friend because I didn't have time to play it when I bought it, and I have not gotten it back from him. But it was on sale, sealed for $12, so I picked it up.
Awesome. Very cool.
Didn't that come out earlier this year?
Maybe at the very beginning of the year.
Perhaps. Or end of last year, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, it just did not sell well. They sent out a press release a couple weeks ago saying that there's zero chance of that game getting a sequel.
They shouldn't say zero. They should say 0.0001.
They said absolutely zero. They said that they did not. It's from the sound of the tone of the press release was basically, we're lucky we didn't lay off the entire studio because that game sold so poorly.
I would have thought after Devil May Cry 2, they'd never make a third one.
But those games sold well.
Did Devil May Cry 2 sell well?
Yeah, because it sold completely based on the name of the first one.
Dude, that was such a travesty.
I thought the third one was the bad one. The one that was on PS3 and Xbox 360 was really bad.
Not as bad as the second.
It was the first PS3 game to be under $20.
Interesting. Okay. I know
that because that was also the first PS3 game I bought.
Yeah, cheapskate. So you play anything else?
Not really.
No. Just the Vamps. Okay.
I played Crash Bandicoot 3.
Well, that's a new one.
Well,
I came back in the day.
Well, no, it was right because we talked about it on our podcast, and all the Naughty Dog Crash Bandicoot games were free the week Uncharted came out. So I did that.
I never finished the first one, but I completed 2 and 3. I don't know why that's important, but yeah.
So do we have an interview this week?
Yes, we do. We have Ryan Phillips from NIS America. He's going to talk about Cave Story 3D, drop some Disgaea 4 DLC info, and talk about some other things.
DLC, dude!
No, pretty! Before we talk about Moonwalker,
you got it.
All right, Desert Eagle here. I'm being joined by Ryan Phillips, NISA America's marketing coordinator and chief printy wrangler, Altered Beast record holder, also. So welcome.
That's right, Phillip.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So before we jump into NISA's latest release, I was hoping to follow up on Bleach, Soul Resurrection, Clayton. X2, Disgaea 4, Alchemist of Arland. How have the titles performed?
Well, starting with Bleach, basically the fan base really kind of helped out with the title. I mean, granted, it was it was a hack and slash, and it was pretty true to the hack and slash genre. Run around and just like go there crazy.
There was hacking and slashing.
Yeah, it was. But I mean. There were, a lot of selectable characters, and, granted it wasn't all the characters. I mean, for them to put all the entire Bleach universe in there would have been pretty difficult. But, yeah, I mean, it did pretty well. I mean, obviously, score-wise, it was, hack and slash-wise, and there were a few things that people would have liked to see to put in, have extra things in the game. But, it did pretty well, and people kind of like to see the cel-shaded graphics and being able to play as their favorite Bleach characters. So, yeah, I mean, it ended up being one of our better-selling titles this year just because of the mass appeal of Bleach, being just like that huge syndicated Shonen Jump title. So, yeah. It was okay.
Very cool. And Claydon?
Claydon's been it's been getting a lot of cool reviews because, I mean, aside from the first one, it really has those extra customization things in there. So, that's kind of the big point for that game is that, you can kind of get lost in the customization before you even try to begin to tackle certain things in the game.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Yeah, I mean, I end up trying to make strange items or,
How strange? Define strange for me.
Strange, I don't know, without going too far down the scatology ladder. So just say strange, esoteric items that may or may not be weapons in the end, but still they can be wielded for damage.
Right.
Much like real life, I don't know what that means, but yeah.
I think you have a lawsuit pending with THQ with Saints Row. I think they stole your idea, the bat there. Now, you guys are one of the few publishers that are still supporting the PSP with the full-fledged releases. Do you guys have an update on Black Rock Shooter, the game? Will we see it before the Vita launch?
That's going to be tough. I don't have the final definitive answer on that, but may not be around
there.
Did you
say may?
It may or may not be around there. But yeah, I don't have pretty much a word on that just yet. But, I mean, it's still in the works, and it's still being planned. So, yeah, I really don't have any news on that. It's just because, there's, the higher-up powers are just kind of ironing things out. And because this will be one of the first titles that we'll be kind of working with Image Epoch on, that, there's a lot of stuff to go through. So,
sure. Yeah,
I mean, when the official newsletter and press release comes out, that's be the soonest the info on that. But, yeah, it's definitely still in the works.
Cool, cool. Looking forward to playing that one. So let's jump to this week's release, Cave Story 3D, and get
you
it.
Got it.
So, how did the 3DS version come about? Was this inspired by Nicholas or Amaya-san, or who started the idea to bring it onto Nintendo's portable?
To the best of my knowledge, it was Nicholas's side. So, basically, you know, they had the relationship already with Pixel or Daisuke.io over in Japan by doing the WiiWare and then the DSiWare ports of the game. So, I mean, Tyrone from Nicholas is just best friends with Daisuke.io. So. I don't think it was too difficult for Daisuke to get on board with that because, you know, it would be the first time that the game actually gets to go in physical, you know, tangible cartridge form. So I'm sure he was all about that.
Yeah.
And because Nicholas is pretty much local, they're actually about 2-3 minutes down the road here from the NIS office. Basically it all started last year at the end of the year, and they came in, and then we just decided, you know, let's just do this. The 3DS was, you know, brand new news to everyone, and it was just definitely exciting. So yeah, we got on board, and that's kind of how it all came to fruition.
Oh, very cool. Now, for listeners who have been living under a rock and may have missed Adam's or my appreciation for the game or even our review, which recently posted, can you give us a synopsis on what Cave Story is?
Yeah, basically, Cave Story was actually created by one man. His name's Daisuke Amaya, and he's from Japan. His nickname is Pixel. And he basically created the game in his own personal time. And he basically loved all the old school Nintendo titles like, Metroid or Castlevania. And he originally was just kind of mixing around music. And it was through the music that, you know, he kind of started thinking about the story. And basically he picked up programming through his friend and being able to program games and then, doing the art all himself too. So basically the entire game, it was early 2000s, it actually, you know, he went through the whole process, and he had a whole other job that he would go to during the day and then come home and make this game. So that's kind of the roots, is that it was made by one person from, when I actually got a chance to meet him this past year at GDC, he was making some of the sounds with his voice from the game. So, you know, he definitely, I mean, he created this whole kind of epic game by himself, 100% by himself.
Yeah.
And
a true auteur.
Yeah, and it's just and that's the reason why it has such an appeal, is because it has that, you know, that best Nintendo game you never played feel.
Yeah.
And another big thing was that the game was for free. It was a PC and then version, and then it got patched with an English translation, and then eventually it got ported to all these different systems for free. And then basically Nicholas came in, and then they wanted to actually get it available through Nintendo themselves, so they made it available through WiiWare, and then now it's also available through DSiWare. And basically, yeah, it all stemmed from just one guy making this game by himself. And if you've never got a chance to play it, just definitely take a look at it, because I mean, if you're a fan of any sort of old school style Metroidvania type game, then this is, I mean, it definitely hits all the points. And it has small little RPG elements, leveling your guns up, and a little bit more text to be able to read and interact with characters compared to other games. And then there's like the if-then situations where it kind of changes your outcome in the game. So, okay, I've talked too much. So,
and there's L.
Yeah.
So one of the things, let's talk about things that were added. There were like a ton of life capsules that were kind of hidden around there. Some pretty goodies, and of course, let's talk about the transition from sprite and tile based graphics to polygons. Can you give us any insight into that transformation process? Because as I mentioned in the review, sometimes that isn't always easy. Like with Sonic 4, just didn't feel right. Do you know how they kind of nailed the physics?
Well, basically, I know that Tyrone and both Daisuke are both kind of perfectionists. So, I mean, I think that was the... That's totally the product of them really nailing it down. I mean, like you said, it's tough to go from, you know, like an 8-bit style looking game, or, you know, to more, you know, higher res looking, you know, polygons. And it's basically they had well, the Nicholas team, they basically took the game and they revamped everything. I mean, the engine itself was made by them. So every single drawing and every single kind of polygon that went through had to go through Daisuke every time. So basically he was kind of the end all, say all at the end of the day. So basically Tyrone, every day when something new was made or any concept art was made or any sort of map was made, he was the one that was giving the final okay, because, you know, it was kind of his baby.
Right. So even the location of like the life capsules, did he have an okay over that?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, basically, I mean, that was kind of, yeah, because he really placed them to where, you know, in the end it was kind of worth going and finding it. And then some of the, I mean, it's kind of tucked up. It's kind of hard to tuck all the new ones into, you know, newer, more intricate areas. So, I mean, I think for my playthrough, first couple playthroughs, it was, I mean, it kind of felt natural. Some of them were like a little bit easier to get, but I think that was the reason why they put them in there, is because the original game was just, you know, if you ever played the original and try to do hell with, you know what I mean, the capped amount of capsules, even if you got them all, it was still really difficult.
Yeah.
So that was kind of one thing they wanted to, you know, to a little bit ease in the appeal. And then if the purists wanted to play the game without getting all those extra capsules, they really didn't have to. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, early screenshots of Cave Story 3D, they created these bouts of nerd rage that reverberated through the internet. Now, what exactly happened there?
Which ones are you talking about? Are you talking about the...
Well, every time I encounter somebody with, you know, talking about Cave Story 3D, they ask how the graphics are. I said, you know, they're great. They're beautiful. And then they say, well... They were worried, and I'm not sure if they were worried about the transition, but a lot of people said that they weren't happy with the early look of the game.
Yeah, you know what? It comes down to the image capture, because you know, because the screen uses two different screens, you're only going to be when you take the screenshots, there's actually two different images, and then they're put together to make it. So, I mean, that and just the pure resolution of both the video and also the screenshots. I mean, it's a brand new system, and the capture machine itself just wasn't up to par compared to everything else that can be taken, you know, the 1080i or 720p. So the screenshots themselves just really, I mean, it was tough for us to capture and give the game the justice that it deserved. You know, when we were, you know, debugging the game and basically through development. So, I mean, the good part was is that we didn't really use any touch screenshots. I mean, there were just like the initial concept art where they showed a little bit more of a perspective. Those were done on the dev machines, but other than that, all the other screenshots that we were taking were raw footage. So, I mean, we didn't really put too many doctored images out there. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a, you know, like kind of feedback on the internet about, you know, hey, this doesn't look that great.
That's it. That's a nice way of saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was my PR way of saying it, I guess, my PC way of saying it. But,
I understand what you're saying. It is hard to capture because the 3DS screen, it automatically looks better because it is kind of a smaller screen and you're often blowing it up for the web. And, you know, there is that problem with resolution coming through. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, but I mean, I playing it, I mean, I had no problems, but yeah, I mean, I could, if I hadn't played it or really taken a role in like the debugging, then I would have think, you know, if I saw that on the internet, I'd probably, you know, being a gamer myself, just be like, oh, okay, well, I kind of have to see it in real life to see what it looks like. But yeah, I mean, I really, judging from just the reception since launch, it really feels like, you know, all those people, kind of have taken that comment back just because it seems to be, you know, everyone seems to be totally fine with the way it turned out. So
Now, are there any secrets embedded in the game that people may not be aware of?
Like Easter eggs or
Easter eggs. Sure.
To be honest, besides the ones that I know here that I was, I mean, I actually like helped debug on the game, so I don't have the ones that we've already announced. Unfortunately, I don't have any other Easter eggs at the moment, besides just, you know, like dumb little things like inside jokes and the credits and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, pretty much there was the printing hat and then the printing area and then the egg corridor annex and then the area immediately following the undead core on the harder ending and then obviously all the life capsules and such, so and then basically the time attack mode, so yeah. I mean, I
how many endings are there altogether?
Well, basically there's the easy ending where you just kind of take off and say, hey, I'm out of here. Yeah. And then there's the second ending where you kind of, well, spoiler alert, but, you know, the there's another one where you get to fight a few more bosses and then kind of, again, escape. And then there's the hardcore hell mode one where you stick through it to the very end and you really find out a little bit more about the story and kind of the area that you're in. So, I mean, if you're – basically, you can play the game – through and, you know, tackle it after a couple hours. But I mean, there's a lot of things that you can kind of go back and replay the game and get different weapons by trading them in or saving certain things or making certain harder jumps to be able to unlock like the better booster 2.0 and such. And then that'll allow you to access all these other different areas. So, I mean, there is like the replay value to be able to see what all the new guns look like in the transition from, you know, the original to the 3D version. So, yeah, but the last ending, it takes you through the level hell, which was, you know, absolutely one of the most difficult, you know, like Ninja Gaiden style areas where it's just punishing and you just have to kind of go through it, but it's yeah, it was fun.
Cool. We got a couple of reader questions. Black Dawn asks, with so many big November releases, why did NISA release Cave Story 3D during the busiest gaming month? Aren't you afraid the game will get buried under a sea of releases?
Well, again, it's we kind of looked at it more from a like a Nintendo 3DS release launch schedule, whereas, I mean, you know, granted, most of the hardcore gamers probably would have a PS3 or Xbox and are looking to get, you know, the AAA titles. But at the same time, if we were planning originally in a little bit more in the summertime and doing that, I mean, basically there weren't many 3DSs at that time. There weren't any other games out, and it would have been an okay time. But at the same time, we were kind of thinking that maybe not enough people had the 3DSs. So, you know, when, now that all the more hardcore launch titles and like Nintendo core titles are coming out, you know, the Mario Land 3D and then, you know, Ocarina of Time came out, and then that more people would be picking up their 3DSs, then, you know, I think this would be kind of the right time to kind of put it along with like the AAA launch schedule titles. And then, I mean, it's been holding up against, you know, score wise pretty well. So yeah, that was kind of the method behind that.
You are going up against Puppies 3D, though. Tough one. Puppies.
Yeah.
Speaking of puppies, we got a question from Triumph the Leg Humper. He asks, dude, D-O-O-D, what's up with the DLC? What's a 9,999 level party supposed to do with themselves these days? Obviously referring to
Skyfall. I commend him on his name first, and then secondly, being able to hit level, you know, almost 9999. It's I do have some good news for you though. So this will be a first. So it's actually going to be announced. I don't know when this is going to go live, but it'll be on Friday. New DLC for Disgaea 4. So let me bring up my little spreadsheet here, and so mark your calendar. It would be November 22nd, 2011. We have a bunch of new DLC coming out. So a few characters and a new map. So that's November 22nd. And then the following month will be December 13th, 2011. And then, again, it'll be additional events for different characters. So basically, for the for both of those two DLCs on both the 22nd of November and the 13th of December. It'll be new characters with events, and then another map on December also.
Very cool. So any prices with that?
Let's see.
$999
$999. No, characters look like they're $299, and mm-hmm. then when they come with an event, and then maps are 99 cents, and then basically each character is $299, and then with an event, and then the maps will be 99 cents.
Okay. Very cool. So one last question for you beyond Black Rock Shooter, which we mentioned earlier. What's in store for N1 fans?
Well, we basically have at the beginning of next year, towards the beginning of next year, we have the Hyperdimension Neptunia MK2. So that's looking pretty awesome. Basically, it got revamped. A lot of things that were kind of the hindrances in the last one are looking a lot better. So got a good feeling about that one, and that one's going to be, again, at the beginning of next year. And then we have the Clan of Champions, so it's still slated for both, you know, PC, PS3, and Xbox release. So that's kind of cool that we're finally going to be branching over to put something over on Xbox. So that one's a little bit more of an action-based style game. And
that is your first Xbox release, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty exciting though, because we get to get all the Xbox debug units in the office and such. So and then there is obviously the Disgaea 3 for the Vita, and then we have a Disgaea Android game. I mean, we don't have too much news on it just yet for like a final end all date for that, but that's looking pretty awesome too.
Wow!
So Disgaea for your Android. And then, am I missing anything else here? I think that's it for right now. But yeah, that'll take us pretty much right into the beginning of next year, and that's kind of all within the first half. So, mm-hmm. and then hopefully by the end of the year, we might have a few more announcements for other titles for year.
So. One question for the next Hyper Neptunia. I haven't followed news on that. Does that follow? Is that the same kind of console wars, or does that go for the next generation?
Well, basically, it's the next generation where it's a younger crowd. The original goddesses are all still kind of in the game, but it's the heroines in the game are a little bit younger, and they're kind of the portable console style. Counterparts to the larger console units, so it kind of revolves around that storyline, and kind of the battle has been changed a little bit, and it's a little bit more of sandboxy style when you go into the dungeon rather than kind of just scripted hallways and going up and down ramps type of thing. So that's the one thing I noticed that kind of popped out in my brain that made me feel a little bit better, because the last one, that was kind of a lot of the feedback we got on that was that the dungeons were a little kind of stale. So,
So DLC, the Tiger Gamecom, right?
What's
goddess?
That?
The Tiger Tiger Gamecom Goddess will be DLC since it's portable. That's an awful joke. I'm sorry for even mentioning that.
You know, they've been like they would put Sega things in the last one. I'm surprised there wouldn't be an Altered Beast one. You know, I would love that
instant sell right there.
Instant it sell. Would be instant for me. It would
since
be
that
first
was
day.
Launch title. Since that was launch title, we got to go with that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Ryan. I appreciate it, and lots to look forward to from NIS.
Thank you so much for having me. And just plenty more coming out next year. So love coming on here. And then I'll see you guys soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
So, real quick work story.
Yes, work story.
There's a guy who's working with, I don't know, some super big secret government agency. I don't know. Right. But he emailed me from his personal account which was
what? Wait, something from personal account?
Yeah, from his Gmail account.
Okay.
And it was, I don't want to say what it was, but it was a Disgaea character's name and dude spelled the Disgaea way.
Oh, wow. What agency?
I'm drawing a blank right now.
Oh, I thought you weren't.
And also, if I wasn't drawing a blank, I probably couldn't tell you.
The anyway, Department of Homeland Security.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But no, it was one of those things like, he likes Disgaea. No wonder he needs help.
Everybody, dude.mil.gov.
Our new CEO also spells dude that way. I've never seen dude spelled that way outside of Disgaea, but he does. He spells it that way. So I'm curious.
Taking over, dude.
So anyway, question.
Back on the record.
What happens next? Is it A, trivia, B, punch in the face, C,
put it in,
or D, save me from this segue and just start trivia?
I'll put it in. It's always put it in is the correct answer.
Oh, I hate it when it's that time of the podcast.
It's time for trivia. Yeah, it is. We'll save you. You guys ready?
I'm ready to roll.
Okay. Beyond groping women, Herman Cain also quotes video game-based movies, which makes him, well, super cool, dude. So, just what film did the presidential candidate cite? Is it A, Mortal Kombat Annihilation? B, Pokemon, the movie, 2000? C, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life? Or D, Final Fantasy VII, Advent Children?
I'm going to say Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life.
Okay. You think? You're going for the boobies. I got you. Herman.
I don't want anything to do with Angelina Jolie's boobies. Woman looks like a mummy.
Pokemon, the movie 2000 blue.
I'll go with that.
Correct answer. Pokemon, the movie 2000. The
baby.
What was the question again?
Beyond groping women. Herman Cain also quotes video game-based movies.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
The line was, life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible, but it's never easy when there's so much on the line.
Pika Pika.
He wants to be the very best, like no one ever was.
So Squirtle for VP.
To be president is my own test. To train you is my cause.
Yes. Trivia can stress a co-host out. That's why it might be time to play Deepak Chopra's Leela, which has a mini game for each chakra in the body. So how many mini games do we get for our $40, Yogi? That should be said in a boo-boo voice. Do we get 5?
Yogi.
There we go. 5, 6, 7, or 11?
7.
Oh, somebody's been studying.
Now, perhaps, you know, I could be wrong, but I thought Naruto taught me that there's like about 20 billion different chakra points
in
the body.
Listen to the sand ninjas. They will lead you wrong every time.
So sand ninjas, is it some sort of racial slur, you racist? I should probably cut that part out.
That's a funny thing. Believe it. So Blue, your pick.
Well, I'm going to use my chakra to control the sand in this giant jar on my back and go with D.
Correct answer. Sean got it. 7. You should have went with him. He nailed it right off the...
Yerp. Damn.
He must be a practitioner of the yogas.
7's a holy number. It's the number of days of the week.
And
number
notes,
of planets in the solar system until we found out that there were more planets than that.
Notes on the major scale. Yeah.
And then we lost Pluto because it became a dwarf planet. Now we only have 8 in a dwarf, right?
Yeah. Well, also, we don't count moons as planets anymore.
No Sailor Moon. By Crom, I'm going to try to hear every one of Skyrim's 60,000 plus lines of dialogue, which were delivered by over 70 voice actors. Which one of the following luminaries won't have their name in the game's final credits? Is it A, Linda Carter, B, Christopher Plummer, C, Patrick Stewart,
or D, Max von Sydow?
I think I'm going to go with B.
It's either B or D. D.
Although Patrick Stewart was in Oblivion and he got axed right in the beginning.
But I think he does a voiceover in part of it.
I'll stick with my answer. I guess B.
Correct answer. D. Patrick Stewart.
Damn it. Oh, damn it.
What the fuck is this shit, number one?
Didn't he do the voiceover in one of the trailers?
He might have the trailer, but he didn't do the...
Son of a bitch.
Game. Number four, recent DS Kids title, Wappy Dog, includes a small robotic dog that communicates with the cartridge for a squeaky clean gaming experience. So what was Activision's tagline for the toy combo? A, all the fun without the shedding. B, this holiday season is going to the dogs. C, kids can't help but smile with Wappy. Or D, finally a pet that won't mess your carpet.
Shit. See, I watched the trailer for Wappy Dog at one point. It sounds like all of those were in there.
Oh,
don't judge me.
Yeah.
I'm going to say...
I can't believe you watched the trailer for Wappy Dog.
See.
I'm still getting over
it. I'm torn.
You're torn.
Wouldn't be much of a tagline if it was just for the holiday season, though, would it?
Sure it would. They don't give a shit what happens to all these after the holiday season. They either sell out or they go into
clearance. Big Lots. Yeah, go to Big Lots. Get your own Wappy Dog for $9.99.
Oh my god. Big Lots is going to be like a Wappy Dog nightmare come 4 months from now.
Yeah, it will
be. That's how this
I'm calling it now. This is going to tank so hard.
I saw this giant remote control.
how did this transition into shit we saw at Big Lots?
That would be an awesome podcast. They're opening a Big Lots right next to me, so we could do that.
But yeah, I saw this giant remote control tarantula, and all I was thinking of was, I could have so much fun with this. I could just have so much fun with
this. How much was that
going? The people I'd spook with it might keel over of a heart attack, so I can't really do it. So it's kind of depressing.
I would have bought that. was it less than 20?
I'm gonna say it was $5.99.
No,
I think
on.
It probably was like $15.88 or something. Yeah, backing Sean. Up like that.
Sean, come on! It's a tarantula. It's remote control.
Big Lots. Yeah. I used to have the entire Robotech figure set that I bought at Big Lots, 99 cents a piece. Well.
Big Lots used to have these remakes.
If we did, you'd turn into the Big Lots show.
All right. So what's your answer, Blue?
It's A.
Correct answer. All the fun without the shedding.
Yeah, Damn it.
That was one. You claimed that was a Wappy Dog.
Did I get it right?
You got it right. I got it wrong.
You Wappy.
Yay! I got it right.
Kids can't help but smile with a Wappy. I like that one.
That's what I picked.
That sounds so awful.
Yeah, it does.
Wappy Dog sounds so awful.
It does.
They don't really need to do much with it to make it sound much worse. Wappy
sounds
Dog.
Sounds like denoting animal abuse.
Yeah, Wappy
Dog. Oh, that's a naughty dog. Just Wappy it in the head.
Wappy Dog. Your kids are going to call it... going to use that to talk about... Ah, shit. I had something clever up there, and it wasn't coming out. It was clever in my brain, but when you put words to it... Basically, that's what your kids are called, masturbating from now on.
Wappy Dog.
Wappy Dog.
I think we're going to name the show Wapping the Dog. This week's PSN release of Chrono Cross is sure to get players lost in alternate dimensions. Before you get too disoriented, name the two other Kato and Mitsuda collaborations. A, remember there's two, Deep Labyrinth. B, Dawn of Mana. C, Sands of Destruction, or D, Princess Maker 2?
I'm going to go with B and C.
Sands of Destruction. Yeah, B and C, I think.
Correct answer, A and C, Deep Labyrinth. And Sean, you reviewed Sands of Destruction, so you better have gotten that one.
That game was okay.
Was it okay?
It was okay. It was nothing to write home about, but it was.
I didn't see it at Big Lots though, so Although I have seen
if only we were allowed to shop at other places. Yes.
I did see GoldenEye at Big Lots with the Classic Controller Pro bundle for $30.
For the Wii, it's still a little bit much. I don't know.
The controller's 20. Normally about 20. 20 or 25.
Sean, that's funny that you're getting a new one because one is just a couple blocks away from me.
So. Well, there you go. Yeah. You know, last time I was at Big Lots, they had this set of the classic Power Ranger toys.
Oh, my God.
But,
oh,
yeah. But they're trying to play it off like you're getting one for free. And so so you had all the Power Rangers, like for the Power Rangers, and then in a separate little compartment was the Black Ranger. Like they set him off into detention or something. It was horrible.
That's racist.
It is racist.
That's awful.
I think I saw that collection at like one of those closeout stores where like all the returns go, but people don't like, but they're still good. It's like $50.
Yeah, it goes for real money on eBay. I'm wondering if it got recalled for just that reason, because it is really horrible when you look at it. You're like, oh, poor Black Ranger. Mastodon.
The segregated Power Rangers. Should we move to mailbag?
We should.
Mailbag. Okay.
We got a question from Drunk Yoshi. He asks, consider that less than 1 out of 20 gamers have ever watched any kind of video game awards. Do the VGAs matter?
Right, so I didn't put it on the outline, but he also linked to Jeff Green's article from last year after the VGAs, and I read through that. And here's my thing about the VGAs. I watched it last year also, and I don't really think there's much of a difference with the VGAs and a presser anymore. I think that the benefit of the VGAs is it's another platform to announce things now.
Right.
And now that the pressers are all on G4 and on, you know, IGN and whatnot, it's basically the same thing. And I know journalists are super pissed because they all give awards and theirs aren't televised. And I know that people are super pissed that Spike TV is a TV station for quote unquote men, and they somehow managed to get exclusives on, you know, really big titles, and people are making pissy things because, I mean, the business of it sucks for game journalists. It really does. Oh, they don't get invited because, you know, fucking Nicole Kidman's gonna go to that and get a free iPod when she sits down. And
I think we got invited.
Did we?
Yeah.
Last year we got invited to stand outside of it.
That qualifies as an invitation, right?
Well, I remember because you were like, Sean, do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll go to the VGAs. And you were like, it's like for the red carpet, though. So you're actually going to be standing outside of the building, outside of a velvet rope, and then you'll be able to look at people walking into this event that you're not going to be able to see. And I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I mean.
Sorry, I handed that down to you. That was fucked up for me.
But it was, I mean, it's one of those things. Yeah, okay, I get it. The awards don't mean anything. Fuck, what awards do mean anything? The games with the biggest budget and the biggest marketing are going to win Game of the Year. That's we've made that countless number of times. The day an indie game that cost like a couple $100 to make wins Game of the Year is the day that I...
Don't you think like Minecraft should win?
But it's not. It was not released this year.
I know.
Whatever year it was officially released, maybe.
But it'll have the Xbox Kinect version. What, later this year or next year?
Maybe it'll get Game of the Year then. But not on the VGAs because that'll be Modern Warfare 3. Because holy fuck, it's making lots of money. But I mean, like, I don't see why people complain about another platform to announce games. Like, get over it. So you're going to have to report on it from your TV because you're not going to be able to go boo-hoo.
I can't comment on it because I'm one of those gamers who I have not seen any video game award shows.
Do you remember the Microsoft? Watching the Microsoft press conference at E3 this year on your laptop?
Some of it, yes.
It's exactly it was like not that.
Yeah, I mean, I know what it's probably like. I know the format, you know, the award show. But, yeah, the Microsoft presser put me to sleep. That was one of the worst ever.
It's basically, you
don't
know, those
don't forget the bad celebrity cameos.
It's basically like, you know how those pressers, they pat themselves on the back for how much they mm-hmm. sold last year, and then they introduce a game. It's the same thing, except for instead of, hey, we sold a billion copies of this game last year, clap clap clap, here's a new game, it's, hey, this game that sold a bunch this year, we're giving it some award for selling a bunch this year, clap clap clap, here's a new game. And it's not mm-hmm. publisher specific.
Sure.
So I think people are complaining just basically because it means that the GamePro Game of the Year and the Game Informer Game of the Year and the IGN Game of the Year feels a little bit less important because it's not on TV and because no celebrities are going to show up to give a shit about it. And at the end of the day, none of these awards mean anything.
Yep.
Like, I know that, like, one of the other complaints was that some of the awards that you could vote on had games that hadn't come out yet during the time of voting.
Yeah.
And people were complaining about that. And I was like, that's not really any different than giving E3 awards. Like, how many E3 awards were given to games that weren't playable at E3?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I don't know. That's the VGAs. They're a thing that you can watch, and they're going to talk about the new BioWare game and Metal Gear Rising.
Hmm. Cool. Bryce asks, are podcast hosts more fun when they drink?
Is it?
We need to find out. We need to do a drunk show.
I used to drink when we did the show, and the problem was I was always cranky by the end. I was too talkative at the beginning, so I stopped.
I listen to a shit ton of podcasts, and I found that one show that really stands out, mainly because they drink the entire time a show's recording, is DG Radio, formerly known as Drunken Gamers Radio. And I'll sit there and I'll laugh my ass off for about an hour and a half straight. There's something about, like, I guess maybe the booze just makes them all giggly or whatever, and then they make dirty jokes, and then they giggle at that, and you know what they say about laughter being contagious or whatever. Hmm. If drinking makes the show funnier, I'm all for it. I mean, it's...
Really, I'm kind of the opposite.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I listen to gaming podcasts for gaming,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, it's nice if humor's in there, but if the focus is on the humor, it loses me.
And then also, if you've ever been the sober one around a bunch of people that are drunk, you realize that they aren't as funny as they think they are. Yeah. So that's kind of my take on that.
But so that's that. The other drunk podcast thing, I think, if you guys want to hear something funny, listen to Losing the Sheen. It's Justin McElroy's podcast he does with his wife that they watch Two and a Half Men, and then they talk about it, and it's really funny.
God, that sounds like torture.
It's so funny though, because the underlying narrative is that this project that they've decided to do is tearing their marriage apart, and every week Justin has to drink more and more during the show in order to get through it. And so it got to the point where week before last he was slurring his words the entire episode, and then last week he was just dead sober. But that's a really fun show to listen to.
That doesn't sound fun at all. Yeah, that sounds so wonderful, Sean.
Sounds like the Two and a Half Men equivalent of like a Smodcast or something.
Yeah, it
sounds like looking up YouTube videos of people accidentally sawing their own appendages off.
Good time.
Okay.
Next question.
Anthraz, how successful were the Kinect and Move at living up to their hype? Look at them a year later.
We've answered this question before.
Didn't we?
Yeah, but basically Kinect is dumb, but it sold well. Move is also dumb, but
living up to the hype. I think Kinect really promised the moon and stars, and they delivered a lot less than that.
I love how since Siri came out, they've got all those commercials like, oh yeah, you know that Siri thing you like? Xbox does that. Yeah, totally. And they do the same Xbox Bing X-Men thing in the commercials. I'm like, I remember that from the show. That was dumb then. It's even dumber.
So wait, they're pushing voice control?
Yeah, like they have this commercial. The commercial is hilarious because, like,
Kevin Butler should do a thing about End War. Be like, yeah, I was doing that back in 2005.
Yeah. Well, it was on both systems, though, wasn't it? Or did it only have voice command on PS3?
I think it did have voice. I just remember I bought a PS3 version that came with a Bluetooth controller.
Yeah. But the commercial's great because it's like, there's so many choices on TV. It's so overwhelming. How are you going to possibly decide? And then they sit on the couch like, Xbox Bing X-Men. X-Men First Class. And it's like, that doesn't help me decide anything. It's just I don't have to touch a remote to do it. It's still like I have endless decisions to make. Is it the fact that I have an Xbox? There's an X on that box. You know what I haven't seen in a while? X-Men.
Right.
Decision made.
That's completely flawed logic.
Yeah.
Maybe the people at Microsoft were drinking heavily before they came up with that marketing campaign.
But their podcast.
You know what the best test for that would be? Xbox, Bing, am I pregnant?
Maury Povich? Xbox, you are not the father.
Yeah. Justin Bieber? I don't know where we're going with that. Next question. Midas asks, how about some early Game of the Year picks?
See earlier question about how those things don't matter. I don't know, Game of the Year pick, Uncharted 3.
Yeah, Skyrim, baby. Blue?
Probably, like...
Fire Pro Wrestling.
Which came out into... Celebrating its, like, what, 5th anniversary as being Game of the Year for me?
Damn it.
As far as Game of the Year goes, I guess... probably, overall, it's going to be either maybe Street Fighter 4 3D Edition for the 3DS or... Forza 4. I mean, I don't play that much as far as new releases go, but okay. I mean, Street Fighter 4 3D Edition, that sucked up a lot of time of my life. I loved Street Fighter 4 on
But could you really give it game of the year? Because it just feels like
I guess maybe the perspective I was taking is just like maybe like portable game of the year, racing game of the year. It's like, sure. Overall game of the year, it's, I mean, let's face it. It's going to be Call of Duty. Everybody knows it's going to be Call of Duty. So
I don't know. Journalists don't seem pretty. I think as far as journalist awards go, it's going to be Skyrim.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't, because listen to any journalist talk about Modern Warfare, and it's good. I'm just tired of it.
Is that what I said? Yikes.
Yeah, but that's what everybody's been saying. So, I mean, and it's fine because it's not for this audience. It's for the 9.5 million other people who bought it this week.
Which brings us to our next question from Indifference. Will mass Call of Duty fatigue begin this year? How excited are you about Super Mario 3D Land and Rayman Origins? I'm giddy. I'm with you, Indifference. I'm giddy about both those. I like platforms.
I'm giddy about Rayman Origins. I could not... care less about Super Mario 3D Land.
No, why?
That's kind of the same way I feel too.
I have this theory about Mario. I call it the Flintstones theory. And this isn't just Mario. Mario is the best example I can think of it. But when I was a kid, Flintstones were rammed down our throats, right? And they, at that point, they had been on the air in some form for like 40 years.
Right.
And
for me, 30. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea was that you were a kid. And because you were a kid, you would watch the Flintstones, because Flintstones are for kids. And Hanna-Barbera's had Flintstones for kids for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, we got more choices than Hanna-Barbera stuff. And kids gravitated towards things that were created specifically for their generation of kids. And now you can't turn on a TV and find Flintstones anymore. And I think that's gradually starting to happen with Nintendo franchises. Nintendo puts the same characters out there year after year, aiming at this emerging audience of younger people. And yeah, us older people watch it too. Older people watch the Flintstones too. They might have not watched the Flintstones kids, but I think that the younger generation that kind of carries Mario forward is more interested in all the other options they have out there now. Hmm. I would not be surprised that if you looked at the teen to younger, preteen and preteen demographics, if more of them play Skylanders for 3DS than Super Mario 3D Land. I'm not saying that it'll outsell Super Mario 3D Land, because I think adults will continue to buy it, but I think the idea of you buy Mario for your kids is gone, or not gone, but moving away.
I don't know if I agree with
that. What about the success of Mario Kart? I mean, that's what about the success of Mario Kart Wii? I mean, that thing was in the top 10 for God knows how many months, and the same with
even more.
But we'll see if see if Mario Kart 3DS is as successful.
I know. It seems like everything I'm hearing about Super Mario 3D Land, at least as far as in the media goes, has been nothing but favorable. I think IGN gave it a 9.5. Of course, IGN's given everything a 9.5 lately.
Well, the other thing too is it seems like too much fan service, and not too much. It is fan service, which Super Mario doesn't normally do. Super Mario has always been about we have this new innovative idea, and we're going to go with it. And now all of a sudden, 25 years into it, they feel this need to cater to the fans, and that tells me that there's something up. You know, like, why do we need the Tanuki suit now? You know, like, a big part of your audience wasn't even born when there was a Tanuki suit.
Probably has something to do with the sluggish 3DS sales.
I played a little bit of it, and if I don't get it in for review, I'll buy it. I really liked it from what, I played about 3 levels. I understand it's a little bit short, but fun. I don't necessarily see the Flintstones analogy. One of the things I thought was always interesting about the Flintstones is that it's one of those cartoon shows. The Flintstones in the later years got very kind of culturally based. They were doing stuff like they would do a parody of Anne Margaret, and kids didn't know who the fuck Anne Margaret, it was supposed to be Anne Margaret, but it was still fun, still fun to watch. And I don't know, in the same way, I think Mario still strikes a certain nerve, like a universal demographic.
I'm not saying that the quality of Mario is gone. I'm saying that, because the Flintstones are the same way.
Well, you said it was fan service.
It is fan service. There's no, oftentimes, why bring back the Tanuki tale?
When you do fan service, there's a lack of creativity. And a lack of creativity, to me, would mean, hey, the quality has been removed. It's not as innovative as it was. It wasn't as edgy.
Is it as innovative or edgy? It sounds like they took old new Super Mario for the Wii and Super Mario 64 and mushed them together.
No,
which sounds fun, like, but it doesn't sound...
It feels more like a toned-down Galaxy, which I know there have been 2 iterations of that.
Yeah, I mean, that, like I said, the Flintstones analogy wasn't it's not innovative or anything like that. It's are the young people going to care that it's Mario? Is it time for Nintendo to renegotiate how important their characters are as opposed to their innovative ideas?
I don't know. I think Mario's like that Mickey Mouse character. He's like that flagship. He represents Nintendo, and with that,
and how many Mickey Mouse cartoons have there been though? They just started doing that Mickey Mouse Club show again. That was the first time Mickey Mouse had been in like any sort of media venture for Disney over a decade.
But what I'm saying is, he represents the company.
Right, when he can always be their company mascot, but I'm just saying.
But when you see a product with Mickey Mouse, or even like anything from a plush toy, it's a symbol. It's a symbol of something much larger. And Mario is that same way. I know I'm getting a fun platformer that anyone can play. It's not going to be too hard. It's got a certain amount of polish, so on and so forth. And I think that is going to carry over to a much larger demographic.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mario is symbolic of something else. Like Mario, there's no story to Mario. There's nothing there, right? It's, the princess or saving the princess, doing something. And, his character, there's not much to it at all. There's never been, right? It's just a very skeletal, storyline. And I really think it's driven by the quality of play of what he signifies.
Mario as a mascot for quality gaming could also just be something on the box, like Mickey Mouse is.
Exactly. Like, we're arguing the same thing. I think that's true.
Yeah,
it's a sign and signifier. It's like, exactly what you're getting here. It's family friendly. That's what he is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also kind of like the replacement for the Nintendo Seal of Quality, if you will. It's totally. It's Mario. It's good.
Yep.
Yeah.
When's the last time there's been a bad Mario game? It's been a while. You know.
Yeah.
Since he taught math or made his appearance on the CDI.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget when he went missing.
Or managed a hotel and we never saw it. all right, so let's move on to the next one. Hey, Rayman Origins looks really good.
I think we also skipped over whether the Call of Duty is going to go, or if people are finally going to start getting burned out on it.
Well, I mean,
it's going to happen sooner or later.
But I think Sean answered that because he said that there's an audience that's just going to continue, that's hooked into that.
Yeah. And you also have to remember that the Call of Duty audience is also the audience that made the first Halo so big, or the first two Halo games so big. Like that audience moved on and grew into the Call of Duty.
Audience. How do you think the Halo, the remaster, is going to do, Sean?
You know what? I thought it was going to be really bad, but anybody I've talked to that is into Halo is really excited about it. Like I was talking to a buddy of mine, Greg, mm-hmm. And he's like super into Halo, and he got his girlfriend into it, but she has seen the games in chronological order. Mm-hmm. So she played Reach, and she's never played the original Halo. So they're really excited about it because she's going to have this really unique way to. Right. She saw the fall of Reach, and now she gets to see what happened because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They're really excited about it, a lot more so than I thought anyone would be. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. I don't know. We'll see how it is. I don't know. I'm interested to see how that is. I think it's really funny that the original Master Chief design seems to be a big important part of that.
Right.
Like I'm not sure if you've been to Target and they have the original Master Chief design figures, and it's just more polygonal Master Chief. Like that was an intentional design decision, not the fact that the Xbox was not very powerful. Mm. But
I just hope because I wasn't really impressed by Reach's engine. I just hope they made some adjustments there.
Isn't it a different? It's like a custom engine for.
No, it's built on the Reach. Built on the Reach engine. So. Because yeah. I heard some problems with a little bit of lag in the multiplayer and hopefully the single player. Like for me, Reach bogged down pretty often in the single player.
Well, this is also the coming out party for
343.
Yeah.
Oh. So
we'll see.
Okay. T-Bolt 22, you guys are pretty spread out. If you were forced to spend a weekend together, besides playing a lot of games, how would it go down?
We would eat and
argue talk about games.
Yeah, and argue. That's what we do at E3 every year.
Yeah. Pretty much just like
Rob and I don't live that far away. We see each other every now and then.
Right.
Less so since I've stopped driving.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would probably be either a Sailor Moon movie marathon or a screening of the original Transformers movie.
Maybe the Transformers one, but there would not be a Sailor Moon marathon if I was spending the weekend with you.
And there would be the fight.
Keep that shit in your room.
Yeah, okay. So, if you'd like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out www.tech-gaming.com for all the latest reviews.
Somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. The font just threw me off tonight. Editorials and weekly new releases. If you'd like our opinions on gaming, pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. I am Robert Allen at tech_gaming. Sean is at Sean Nola. That's two N's. Sage Morris Green isn't here with us, but you can find her at Samarage. And Blue Swim can be found at Blue Swim, of course.
And real quick, people, if you guys could just drop Sage kind of a nice line. She wasn't with us tonight because she had to put her cat down. And she actually wanted to come on the show, but she said she was a little too weepy to actually talk about games right now. So if you guys could just drop her a quick tweet, let her know you're thinking about her. Mm-hmm. She'd really appreciate that.
Yep. The one thing that kind of unites us that we all have in common is we like animals as much as we like games. So, that's the one thing we have in common.
Yeah. I mean, I know when I had to put my cat down back in 2009, I mean, that was probably the first time in a decade I actually broke down and cried. I mean, I love my animals.
Yeah. Luckily, I made a deal with the devil that I will never have to put my dog down because I agreed to be on a podcast and then sacrifice my hosts if it ever comes to it.
Oh.
Quite the Faustian deal. Well, I sold my soul a long time ago, so it can't kill me.
Anyway, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes.
So, your favorite soulless host signing out.
Peace.